the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and he also created gemstones. And do we know how to identify a gemstone? What is a gemstone? Anybody want to venture a definition? Well, the dictionary says that a gemstone is a precious or a semi-precious stone that can be used as a jewel when cut and polished. That means it's very special, very beautiful, and hard, so that it would take a polish. Although there are soft gemstones, too, that do take polish. Now, I have some questions for you. Where are gemstones first mentioned in the Bible? And I'll say gemstones and minerals. Anybody want to guess?
Probably in Exodus. That's the first one you have up there.
I'm going to go Genesis 41, 42.
Yeah, you have them listed for us as a personal adornment.
Actually, it's the second chapter of Genesis. Right in the beginning, right in the creation, in the Garden of Eden, there was a river which divided into four streams. And the first one surrounded the land of Havilah. And there was gold and bdellium and onyx stone there. Bdellium is believed to be probably an opalized form of wood. And this is an opalized form of wood. Onyx stone, we have two types here, but the Bible refers to precious onyx stone, which would be this type, because this is a silicate and is not affected by acid. It's very hard. This is a calcite type of onyx. You can carve it and do many things with it, but it's much softer. Most stones do not have the same name for two chemistries. This is an unusual one, the onyx stone. Now, where are gemstones last mentioned in the Bible?
Revelation.
Revelations 21. Chapter 21, the next to the last chapter. And you're going to think of a number in a minute. Where or how many minerals and gemstones are mentioned between the second chapter of Genesis and the next to the last chapter of Revelations? Want to venture some numbers, some wild guesses?
30,
okay. Anybody else?
300.
All right, we've got a span there.
150.
Well, there are 1,704 times that's mentioned. Now, if you were going to rearrange those so that they appeared one to a page, what chapter, what book of the Bible would you be in when you ran out of gemstones? Mm-hmm. I should have asked you that before I told you the number. You would go through Revelations once and then come back and go through it again. I think most Bibles. In what country were most of the books of the Bible written? I'm thinking of the Old Testament, especially right now. Well, most of the books of the Bible are about what people? The Israelites. So where do you think most of it would be in Israel? And what gemstone deposits exist there? Does anybody know that? How many deposits would you think would exist there, considering the number of times that minerals and gemstones are mentioned?
It's about all rock is all it is.
Well, actually, there is only one, the Elot Stone, and the archaeological surveys show practically no gemstone and mineral in Israel and Syria. And yet, the Bible is full of gemstones. And I think to understand why, we need to talk a little bit about the background of the people there. In ancient times, Israel was a prime corridor between Africa and Eurasia. And you had the Assyrians were interested in getting at the Egyptians, and other people were interested in other countries on other sides. But you had the traffic routes, trade routes, going north-south, east-west. And Israel was practically the crossroads, the center of the world, in a way. And whereas there were no gemstones other than the Elot Stone, and the Elot Stone is, there are some samples of it here. This is the Elot Stone, and it is, the composition is chrysocolla and malachite mixture. This is one in the rough that has had a cut made on it, and this is one that has been polished. And that is located down on the tip of the Red Sea at what is called Elot now, but in real ancient Bible times was called Ezion Geber, I think it is. And so that was their only source, local source of gemstone. King Solomon's mines are located down there, fairly close to Elot. If any of you have been to Israel, perhaps you have visited them. But Israel was sort of the land between, and so you had the traders going back and forth and back and forth. And the Baltic amber traders are believed to have established their routes 9,000 years ago. That's a long time ago. But if you go to Jericho, you can look down on a wall and a gate that has been dated back to 9,000 years ago. And there's documentary evidence of a very close knit network of Indian Ocean trade. You have the Arabs that had a really lively trade down the East African coast. And they would go down as far as what they called the land of Zinj, which is known to us as Zanzibar. And there would meet the ships from India. And India has long had quite a supply of gemstone. And we still get a lot of gemstone from India. We have some. In fact, this piece of agate right here is from India. And this piece of African blue lace is from South Africa. This is just a common agate that would be found on the deserts most anywhere. So the traders then would be crossing Israel, and here you had people who didn't have it from their own sources. And so this material, anything that is imported and comes in, becomes rather special and precious to them, and particularly since it was beautiful. The Phoenicians were the regional distributors. Egypt had 15 kinds of precious stones. Northern Mesopotamia had 4 kinds. And lapis lazuli, which is a sort of famous for being mentioned in the Bible, most people know it only by the Bible, came from Babylonia. And this is a piece of lapis. And this is a little cabochon that has been polished. I think it's been polished. Yes, of lapis. Now, while I'm mentioning lapis, I might say that you will notice if you read different translations that in the list of gemstone, not all translations list them the same, and you'd wonder why. The science of mineralogy is much newer than many other sciences, and consequently, it did not exist at the time that the Bible was first written. So we're not sure of the names that they used. The translators have tried to go by descriptions in some cases, lapis lazuli being one, where it's really described as a blue stone with sparkles. And that could be a sapphire, too, you see. Or it could be lapis lazuli. In the Bible, many places, they've translated it sapphire, and yet they doubt if sapphires were not in that area, you know, and so some people question it and feel that it really was the lapis lazuli, because in that blue stone you have little flecks of iron pyrite, and that gives it little sparkles. I don't know if you can see it in this one, but when you come up closer, you might be able to detect it.
Can we turn the lights on?
Yes, yes, I think that would help. Oh, yes, much better. Oh, we've got lots of light. Fine. Good. Now, in about 900 B.C., in King Omri's time, we had foreign merchants who promoted trade by establishing gem-cutting factories in Samaria. You can take this far back. They were getting the Israelites to be their gem-cutters in that country, and one way of promoting the trade. I wonder if you know the origin of the descriptive term precious stone.
Referred to Christ, the precious stone.
It's been used that way. Well, the origin, it's a Hebrew word, and it came into the English language through biblical translation. That was where we got it. And other terms, expressions that we have acquired from the Bible are like costly stones, stones of setting, stones of fire, precious jewel, a most rare jewel, fair jewels, stones of remembrance. So our attitude then for the rare and beautiful is influenced by the Bible. In the archaeological excavations that they have made in Palestine, they have not found too many gemstones, actually, except in the 15th and 14th century BC levels. And these collections were found at Megiddo and Gezer and Ezion Geber, which would be a lot, and we would understand that. They're finding them there. Megiddo would be fairly close to the Phoenicians, and since they were the distributors, you might see how they would be found there. Gezer Tel is located about midway between Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, if any of you have been to Israel. And that, again, could be on a caravan route, you see, because it would be Jaffa in those days. And There were two gifts that the Israelites received that I think would be considered rather large gifts, and I wonder if you could remember where that the source of those gifts.
Well, would one be the Ark of the Covenant?
Well, this would be a gift to them from outside of their country, but a gift. Well, one would be...
Solomon.
Yes,
Solomon,
that's right.
Gifts from...
Yes, the Queen of Sheba. Do you remember the Queen of Sheba came with her train of camels that were loaded down with gold and spices and gems and whatnot. That would be one.
But David must have received something?
Well, no, the other one goes back to, well, they're leaving Egypt. And you remember God told Moses to tell them to ask the people that they were leaving to give them jewelry to take with them. And so they had this collection. And perhaps God had in mind the building of the temple later, because later they were instructed to bring forth their gold and their gemstones for that. So those are the two main gifts or two sources, other than their finding ways of buying them from the traders. But they did become gemstone cutters or lapidaries, really, dating clear back to 900 BC. Among the collections of stones that have been found through archaeological digging, the Phoenicians had many beautiful engraved stones. And of course the Egyptians have quite a collection. Have any of you seen the King Tut exhibit? Mm-hmm. And you saw a lot of quite a variety of gemstones there. You probably noticed that there were no faceted stones in that collection, because the art of faceting was not developed until, it was a European technique and was developed in about 1400-1500, along in there. So their cutting and polishing of stones was in the cabochon, which is what we do downstairs. That's a beginner's technique, and was the very beginner's technique way, way back. Also, Greece, in the archaeology there, they find evidence of many gemstones. Do any of you know what Israel's chief export is today?
Diamonds.
What did you say?
Diamonds, isn't it?
Diamonds, yes. Cut diamonds. Not a diamond to their name. Now, how do you explain this? 60 to 75% of the cut diamonds of the world are cut in Israel. It is the diamond cutting capital. And 747s fly plane loads of raw diamonds with their guards from South Africa to Israel.
I thought Amsterdam.
They have surpassed Amsterdam. Israel has two diamond exchanges in that little country. I think the United States only has one, and Amsterdam only has one. No, they are gemstone cutters. So we wonder, I've asked this question, in Israel, did the craft of gem cutting go with the Israelites into captivity in 70 AD and then return with them in 1948? And they said yes. And if you would stop and think throughout the years of your life, wherever you lived, who were your jewelers?
Jewish people.
Mm-hmm. They took their craft with them and they brought it back. Well, God uses gemstones through Moses and Job and Isaiah, Ezekiel and John and others in symbolism to impress upon the Israelites and also on us some very important, significant truths. And I think we'll look at those just briefly. I have listed, where is it? Over here. Here are the five principal lists of precious stones. And we'll take the first four that are in the Old Testament. And I want to show you here a book that is in the library. We must have you look at the cover for now, of Aaron's breastplate. And the building of the temple, you know, that God gave Moses very specific directions on everything that was to be done, all the handcrafting. And for Aaron, who was to be the high priest and represent the people in the Holy of Holies, he had to wear a certain vestment. And this is the ephod that he was to wear, with the breastplate that fit on this ephod. This particular book is made of the actual breastplate that this book represents. It's a unique modern replica of precious stones and fine gold, which was presented to the Baptist Assembly at Green Lake, Wisconsin. And it's in a permanent exhibit there. If any of you are going through, you might want to stop and see it. And a man by the name of Orrin Evans purchased and donated all of the precious stones. A. Paul Davis designed the jewel, and he cut and engraved the stones and fabricated the gold. Lillian Wessel wove the cloth and the ribbons, and Roy Whistler furnished the fine gold. And I think it took them about 4 years to do this, because they researched everything they could to try to get the gemstones as accurate as they thought they might be. This page is the actual size, and I'm going to read. I'll leave this so you can see it. I've got two copies, so I can do this back to back here. But each stone represents a tribe, and each is engraved with the names of the tribe, and beside each stone is the tribal symbol, appliqued in gold. The inscriptions are in Phoenician. In parentheses, it says Hebrew. Now, Reuben was a red jasper, and you have to read from right to left in Hebrew. So you start over here, and these go in this direction. If you can see that. Reuben was red jasper, and this tribal symbol was the almond blossom. Simeon, the golden citrine, which I think the Bible calls it topaz, but they think it was citrine, which looks very much like topaz. The symbol was the sword. Levi, the emerald, the tables of law. Judah, the ruby, a lion. Dan, lapis lazuli, a serpent. Naphtali, rock crystal, and in parentheses it might have been a diamond. An antelope. Gad, the golden sapphire. Tents were his symbol. Asher, the blue sapphire, an olive tree. Issachar, the amethyst, a donkey. Zebulun, yellow jasper, a ship. Joseph, golden beryl, an ox. Benjamin, chrysoprase, a wolf. Now the shoulder ornaments. These shoulder ornaments are sea green beryls, cut from a single stone, each engraved with six tribes, and that was according to the instructions. Now the Urim and Thummim, which has always puzzled me all my life, just exactly what it is, and here it is. That's the way it was to be constructed. And they are deep blue, aquamarine, and pinkish golden beryl, engraved with Aleph and Tau, the yes and no answers to prayer. And this book does give some little explanation, maybe if there's time at the end, if you're interested in knowing what it was. It was helpful to know where the biblical references were, to find a reference to the Urim and Thummim. It was helpful to me, at least. But this, then, these fit on his shoulders, you see, and this tied around his waist. And then this was used, apparently, in answers to prayer some way. We really don't know too much about it. So that's our first list. And now let's look at the next one, Job's wisdom list. Job talks about man digs mines in the depths of the earth, searching for every precious thing. But where does wisdom come from? Where is understanding to be found? And then there follows, when you read it, you'll find a long list of precious metals and gemstones. He takes each one in turn. Gold will not buy it. Sapphires will not buy it. It goes on and on. Gold, silver, precious onyx, sapphire, crystal, coral, pearls, rubies, topaz, each one in turn, none of which can purchase wisdom or match it in value. Only God has traced its path. And God answers him and says, wisdom, it is the fear of the Lord. Understanding, the avoidance of evil. Isaiah, and I think I'm going to read a little bit from Isaiah. Each of these, as you notice, is getting across. It's God speaking through someone and God getting across the truth. And now, the truth of Isaiah. Here he is emphasizing the permanence, the durability of his everlasting love for his people. And in chapter 54, verse 10, starting with verse 10, for the mountains may depart and the hills be removed, but my steadfast love shall not depart from you, and my covenant of peace shall not be removed, says the Lord, who has compassion on you. O afflicted one, storm-tossed and not comforted, behold, I will set your stones in antimony and lay your foundations with sapphires. I will make your pinnacles of agate, your gates of carbuncles, and all your wall of precious stones. All your sons shall be taught by the Lord, and great shall be the prosperity of your sons. In righteousness you shall be established. You shall be far from oppression, for you shall not fear. He uses something that is precious and very meaningful in each case in reaching the Israelites. Now in Ezekiel, which is the next list, and here God is speaking through Ezekiel, presumably to the king of Tyre. The text seems directed to personified city of Tyre, which has grown rich and beautiful, a thing of splendor, decked in precious jewels, and they are listed. But it became swollen with pride, corrupt, and to be destroyed. In other words, pride goes before a fall. Parts of this text has been applied to the fall of Lucifer by some people, and some say that it gives also a glimpse of earth before man. You may want to read that through for yourself sometime. Now that's the first four that I said we would refer to. Now in the New Testament there are four. Not all of them are listed up there because they were not all long lists. But can you think of the first place that we might choose? Matthew 7:6 is Jesus speaking, and he says, don't throw your pearls before swine to be trampled. And Matthew 13:45-46, Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for fine pearls. When he finds one of great value, he sells everything he owns and buys it. Now, the fifth and the final one of the principal lists is the end of Revelations. The 10th verse of chapter 21, and in the spirit he carried me away to a great high mountain and showed me the holy city Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God, having the glory of God, its radiance like a most rare jewel, like a jasper, clear as crystal. Now here is an example of why they differ, because jasper in our mineralogy is not a clear stone, it's an opaque stone. It had a great high wall with 12 gates, and the gates 12 angels, and on the gates The names of the 12 tribes of the sons of Israel were inscribed. Then I'm skipping down now to verse 18. The wall was built of jasper, while the city was pure gold, clear as glass. The foundations of the wall of the city were adorned with every jewel. The first was jasper, the second sapphire, the third agate, the fourth emerald, the fifth onyx, the sixth carnelian, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysoprase, the 11th jacinth, the 12th amethyst, and the 12 gates were 12 pearls, each of the gates made of a single pearl, and the street of the city was pure gold, transparent as glass. And I saw no temple in the city, for its temple is the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb. And the city has no need of sun or moon to shine upon it, for the glory of God is its light, and its lamp is the Lamb. There's much more to that which you may want to read for yourselves. I have one more question. Can you name the most precious stone that is spoken of in the Bible? This is where you find it. Psalms chapter 118, verse 22. I'll read that one to you. The stone which the builders rejected has become the head of the corner. All right, Isaiah 28:16. Therefore, thus says the Lord God, behold, I am laying in Zion for a foundation a stone, a tested stone, a precious cornerstone, of a sure foundation. He who believes will not be in haste. In Matthew 21:42, Jesus said to them, have you never read in the scriptures? The very stone which the builders rejected has become the head of the corner. This is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. That was the question. You also find that same quote in Mark chapter 12, verse 20, and in Luke chapter 20, verse 17. Then in Acts chapter 4, verses 11 and 12, this is the stone which was rejected by you builders, but which has become the head of the corner, and there is salvation in no one else. For there is no other name under heaven given among men by which we must be saved. And Ephesians chapter 2, verse 19 to 22. So then you are no longer strangers and sojourners, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God, built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Christ Jesus himself being the cornerstone, in whom the whole structure is joined together and grows into a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are built into it for a dwelling place of God in the Spirit. And the last one, which I like the very best, 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 4, come to him, that living stone rejected by men, but in God's sight chosen and precious. And like living stones, be yourselves built into a spiritual house, to be a holy priesthood, to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For it stands in Scripture, behold, I am laying in Zion a stone, a cornerstone, chosen and precious, and he who believes in him will not be put to shame. And the whole Bible focuses around this precious stone. Do you have questions? There is a book that has been written on the gems and minerals of the Bible. When I tried to buy it in the United States, they said it was out of print. I found it just accidentally in a bookstore in Israel, bought the one and only copy. Mm-hmm. And it'll probably eventually go into the library, but not for a while yet. And I mentioned it because if any of you run into it, know that it is hard to get, and buy it. I'll buy it from you if you don't want it yourself. This book takes up more of the study of each stone, and lists them one at a time, and also refers to the differences in the translations. But I am finding it very interesting. For example, adamant, A-D-A-M-A-N-T, is a very hard stone of ancient times. We think it might have been corundum. Some think it might have been the diamond. And it is sometimes used as a synonym for diamond. So that is possible, but there is some interesting reading in it if you...
Is it written by an Israelite, or...?
It's written by Ruth Wright and Robert Chalborn, and it's published in Connecticut. Oh.
And you pick it up in Israel, huh?
Mm-hmm. And only place I can find it.
Maybe find a garage sale sometime.
Yes, maybe so.
When the kings of Israel and... say Egypt and stuff, probably use the gemstones in their crowns and on their... Were there specific stones that they used for specific reasons, like if it was red or green or whatever? Because they meant certain things to them, or did they just put them on because they were pretty?
Well, this list over here may give you some ideas here. We know that they used them for personal adornment, and your references are given. They were somewhere. I had a list of all the different types of jewelry that they wore. They had everything that we have, including nose rings. So, and I hadn't thought about the Israelites wearing nose rings. Gifts and tokens of friendship. Their places, their royal crowns. We could look up one or two of them and see. You said royal crowns. Let's see. Where's 2 Samuel? Here we are.
I just wondered that certain colors represent or symbolic of certain things. Did they choose certain stones to...
Purple was a sort of a precious color to them, but that came from a marine animal. You know, it was a dye, so that wouldn't be from the gemstone. We have amethyst, which is actually a lavender form of quartz. And amethyst, of course, is one of them that is mentioned. What was that?
Dorothy, could you read off your list so I could get it on tape?
All right. Okay, do you want me to read the biblical references too? Okay, the personal adornment would be Exodus 11, verse 2, and Isaiah chapter 3, verse 19 through 21. The gifts and tokens of friendship you find in Genesis chapter 41, verse 42, and 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 2 and 10. In 2 Chronicles chapter 9, verse 19, in Ezekiel chapter 16, verse 11 and 39, and also in chapter 23, verse 26. Royal crowns are in 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 30, and 1 Chronicles chapter 20, verse 2, and Zechariah chapter 9, verse 16. Royal garments, Ezekiel chapter 28, verse 13. Royal treasury, 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 11. 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 2. 2 Chronicles chapter 9, verse 10. chapter 32, verse 27, the royal sanctuary, 2 Chronicles, chapter 3, verse 6, and Esther, chapter 1, verse 6, and Dan, chapter 11, verse 38, and the high priest's insignia, Exodus, chapter 28, verses 15 to 21, also chapter 39, verses 8 to 14, and in Ecclesiastics, verse chapter 50, verse 9. So,
what's the origin of the word lapidary?
I think from Latin, lapis refers to rock. Your lapis lazuli is a blue rock. Only I think would be of the type that would really mean stone. There is, in the Hebrew, you know, there's more than one word for rock, and one means a stone and one means the big rock. The difference in our definition in our own dictionary between a rock and stone is that the rock is the mountain where it was formed, and the stone is when you take a piece of the mountain and bring it in and do something and use it.
The polishing must have been done by hand then.
Well, I would imagine, I would guess that they would have foot treadles, don't you think so, for wheels and abrasives. It's, and when you go to the Holy Land and look at some of the archaeological finds, the archaeological records, there were civilizations that were highly developed. And I think especially if you get up into Mesopotamia, I say the city of Ur, for example, where Abraham started out from, has a tremendous library that they've unearthed with clay tablets. And they have learned a lot from their excavations, particularly in finding these libraries. So the people were a lot more advanced in their way than we give them credit for being. What time of day is it?
We
tend to. Do you have more questions?
No.
You're free to look at these stones that are exhibited here. I've tried to pick up all of the stones that I could. I'm sure I don't have all of them that are mentioned in the Bible. I think there's a list of about 50. One of the things that I started doing one time was making the comparisons of the different translations. But I really think that is so useless because it doesn't matter what the stone was. The point is it was a precious stone to those people. And it meant a great deal to them. And we don't know whether God used gemstones because he knew they were precious and important to the people, or whether they became precious and important to the people because God used them.